Monday, November 2nd, 1942. Dear Kitty, Bep stayed with us Friday evening. It was fun, but she didn't sleep very well because she'd drunk some wine. For the rest, there's nothing special to report. I had an awful headache yesterday and went to bed early. Margot's being exasperating again. This morning, I began sorting out an index card file from the office because it had fallen over and gotten all mixed up. Before long, I was going nuts. I asked Margot and Peter to help, but they were too lazy, so I put it away. I'm not crazy enough to do it all by myself. Anne Frank. P.S. I forgot to mention the important news that I'm probably going to get my period soon. I can tell because I keep finding a whitish smear in my panties, and Mother predicted it would start soon. I can hardly wait. It's such a momentous event. Too bad I can't use sanitary napkins, but you can't get them anymore, and Mama's tampons can be used only by women who've had a baby. Comment added by Anne on January 22, 1944. I wouldn't be able to write that kind of thing anymore. Now that I'm rereading my diary after a year and a half, I'm surprised at my childish innocence. Deep down, I know I could never be that innocent again, however much I'd like to be. I can understand the mood changes and the comments about Margot, Mother, and Father as if I'd written them only yesterday, but I can't imagine writing so openly about other matters. It embarrasses me greatly to read the pages dealing with subjects that I remembered as being nicer than they actually were. My descriptions are so indelicate. But enough of that. I can also understand my homesickness and yearning for Mortje. The whole time I've been here, I've longed unconsciously, and at times consciously, for trust, love, and physical affection. This longing may change in intensity, but it's always there. Thursday, November 5th, 1942. Dear Kitty, the British have finally scored a few successes in Africa and Stalingrad hasn't fallen yet, so the men are happy and we had coffee and tea this morning. For the rest, nothing special to report. This week I've been reading a lot and doing little work. That's the way things ought to be. That's surely the road to success. Mother and I are getting along better lately, but we're never close. Father's not very open about his feelings, but he's the same sweetheart he's always been. We lit the stove a few days ago, and the entire room is still filled with smoke. I prefer central heating, and I'm probably not the only one. Margot's a stinker. There's no other word for it. A constant source of irritation, morning, noon, and night. Anne Frank. Monday, November 9th, 1942. Dearest Kitty, yesterday was Peter's birthday, his 16th. I was upstairs by 8, and Peter and I looked at his presents. He received a game of Monopoly, a razor, and a cigarette lighter. Not that he smokes so much, not at all. It just looks so distinguished. The biggest surprise came from Mr. Van Dan, who reported at 1 that the English had landed in Tunis, Algiers, Casablanca, and Oran. This is the beginning of the end, everyone was saying. But Churchill, the British Prime Minister who must have heard the same thing being repeated in England, declared, "This is not the end. It is not even the beginning of the end, but it is, perhaps, the end of the beginning." Do you see the difference? However, there's reason for optimism. Stalingrad, the Russian city that has been under attack for 3 months, still hasn't fallen into German hands. In the true spirit of the annex, I should talk to you about food. I should explain that they're real gluttons up on the top floor. Bread is delivered daily by a very nice baker, a friend of Mr. Kleiman's. Of course, we don't have as much as we did at home, but it's enough. We also purchase ration books on the black market. The price keeps going up. It's already risen from 27 to 33 guilders, and that for mere sheets of printed paper. To provide ourselves with a source of nutrition that will keep, aside from the 100 cans of food we've stored here, we bought 300 pounds of beans. Not just for us, but for the office staff as well. We'd hung the sacks of beans on hooks in the hallway, just inside our secret entrance, but a few seemed split under the weight. So we decided to move them to the attic, and Peter was entrusted with the heavy lifting. He managed to get 5 of the 6 sacks upstairs intact and was busy with the last one when the sack broke, and a flood, or rather a hailstorm, of brown beans went flying through the air and down the stairs. Since there were about 50 pounds of beans in that sack, it made enough noise to raise the dead. Downstairs, they were sure the house was falling down around their heads. Peter was stunned, but then burst into peals of laughter when he saw me standing at the bottom of the stairs, like an island in a sea of brown with waves of beans lapping at my ankles. We promptly began picking them up, but beans are so small and slippery that they roll into every conceivable corner and hole. Now each time we go upstairs, we bend over and hunt around so we can present Mrs. Van Dan with a handful of beans. I almost forgot to mention that Father has recovered from his illness. Yours, Anne. P.S. The radio has just announced that Algiers has fallen. Morocco, Casablanca, and Oran have been in English hands for several days. We're now waiting for Tunis. Tuesday, November 10th, 1942. Dearest Kitty, great news! We're planning to take an eighth person into hiding with us. Yes, really. We always thought there was enough room and food for one more person, but we were afraid of placing an even greater burden on Mr. Kugler and Mr. Kleiman. But since reports of the dreadful things being done to the Jews are getting worse by the day, Father decided to sound out these two gentlemen, and they thought it was an excellent plan. It's just as dangerous whether there are seven or eight, they noted rightly. Once this was settled, we sat down and mentally went through our circle of acquaintances, trying to come up with a single person who would blend in well with our extended family. This wasn't difficult. After Father had rejected all the Van Dan relatives, we chose a dentist named Albert Dussel. He lives with a charming Christian lady who's quite a bit younger than he is. They're probably not married, but that's beside the point. He's known to be quiet and refined, and he seemed, from our superficial acquaintance with him, to be nice. Meep knows him as well, so she'll be able to make the necessary arrangements. If he comes, Mr. Dussel will have to sleep in my room instead of Margot, who will have to make do with the folding bed. We'll ask him to bring along something to fill cavities with. Yours, Anne. Thursday, November 12th, 1942. Dearest Kitty, Meep came to tell us that she'd been to see Mr. Dussel. He asked her the moment she entered the room if she knew of a hiding place and was enormously pleased when Meep said she had something in mind. She added that he'd need to go into hiding as soon as possible, preferably Saturday, but he thought this was highly improbable since he wanted to bring his records up to date, settle his accounts, and attend to a couple of patients. Meep relayed the message to us this morning. We didn't think it was wise to wait so long. All these preparations require explanations to various people who we feel ought to be kept in the dark. Meep went to ask if Dr. Dussel couldn't manage to come on Saturday after all, but he said no, and now he's scheduled to arrive on Monday. I think it's odd that he doesn't jump at our proposal. If they pick him up on the street, it won't help either his records or his patients, so why the delay? If you ask me, it's stupid of Father to humor him. Otherwise, no news. Yours, Anne.